Species.
Unite.
Chickens have full color spectrum vision. That means they see the entire spectrum of colors from the infrared to the ultraviolet. The reason that roosters crow when for humans it's still dark outside is because they see the sunrise before we do, because they see infrared light. So they're up and about in what for them is daylight, when for us it is dark out.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Karen Davis. Karen is the president and founder of United Poultry Concerns. They're an organization that promotes the compassionate and respectful treatment of domesticated birds. And they also have a sanctuary for chickens in Virginia. Karen and I did this interview as a live episode in June because, well, chickens are the most abused land animal on the planet, and because I wanted to know more about them. Every year, a staggering 70 billion chickens are raised and slaughtered for meat, and around 300 million more are kept for egg production. Before this interview, like I said, I didn't know much about them, so I wanted to talk to Karen because she knows almost all there is to know about chickens. She's written numerous books about them. Her most recent is called For the Birds, From Exploitation to Liberation, Essays on Chickens, Turkeys, and Other Domesticated Fowl.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
It's good to meet you.
It's great to meet you too, Elizabeth. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Even though I've been vegetarian since I was a kid and then vegan later, and I haven't eaten a chicken since I was a child, I don't know that much about chickens. And it didn't really occur to me until this week when I started learning more about you, like how little I know. And I'm someone who advocates for all animals. And then it made me start thinking, if I'm someone who would never eat a chicken, but I don't know anything. Unless they have chickens or they're somewhere in their life, somehow we've kind of skipped over really getting to know chickens, so many of us. I think one of the jobs of Species Unite is to create better PR for all animals, especially for people who aren't thinking about them much. And since you, I think, probably know more about chickens than anybody, that's one thing I really want to just understand better, who they are. And also your story, how you have created this incredible sanctuary. And then because even though we've come so far in some ways in terms of, you know, the world changing for the better for animals, numbers wise, we've gone the opposite way, right? Because population and everything else, and chickens have gotten the brunt of it. And so all of those reasons are why I wanted to do this today. So that was my... the purpose.
As you're saying, even within the animal advocacy movement, most people are not familiar with chickens, period. They've not met them. The people who run sanctuaries are the ones who get to know chickens. I mean, yes. Good sanctuaries, good farmed animal sanctuaries, they get to know chickens. And they're really, along with me, of course, trying to impart the firsthand intimate knowledge that we have acquired and are continuing to acquire about these birds to not only the mainstream public, of course, which is hard enough, but even within the movement. And I didn't know anything about chickens either until the mid-1980s. I feel like a person who really knows chickens is in a totally different universe from all the people who just don't know them.
We need more, though. We need a lot more people to get us to understand chickens, right?
I know. I started the organization in 1990, so this is our 33rd year of nonstop advocacy and education on behalf of these birds, including our sanctuary. my then husband, who is since deceased, but he and I moved from Tacoma Park, Maryland, to a little place in Darmstown, a little house, almost like a cabin, in a part of Montgomery County, Maryland, which is outside Washington, D.C. We rented this place from a landlady there. And it turned out that she and her friend raised chickens, maybe about 100 chickens there. We did not know that when we rented the property. We rented actually like an acre and a half on what was 25 acres of property that was just wonderful, lovely nature. But one day in June of 1985, I was taking a little walk around that big, lovely property, and I was on a little path several yards from the house that Alan and I were living in, and there was this very ramshackle-looking building, and just like a little shed, and I went around, and there was this wooden door shut by it with a shoestring, and I untied the shoestring. And I peeked inside, and here were like maybe 100 pretty large white chickens. And from that day, I would visit them every day. I just, the chickens learned by the second day I visited. They would hear me coming, and as many as possible would be right there at that screen door, that little door. It was clear to me that they really appreciated my visits, that I would sit down on the dirt floor and I would sometimes have a magazine or something with me or a book, and they would all gather around me and they just seemed so pleased to have company or to have somebody pay attention to them. And meanwhile, several had heart attacks. At that time, I knew so little about the chicken industry and about this particular type of chicken who has been bred and raised specifically for the chicken meat industry. But I saw how frequently they just died. And of course, I subsequently learned how they have been bred to grow so fast and so heavy that their hearts and lungs cannot accommodate the rapidly growing body and the need for oxygenated blood. And consequently, they just develop congestive heart failure and a whole range of other related diseases. It's a terrible thing, as I always say to people, you know, how does it feel to have a completely dysfunctional and alien body imposed or inflicted upon you against your will by another species? A chicken is basically somebody who is encased and incarcerated in a body that has nothing to do with who a chicken is, and a body which doesn't work right. The immune systems of these birds are just overwhelmed by everything that is going on inside them genetically. And then, of course, if they're on an industrial farm, so-called, they're living in a cesspool, and that's literally about how you would describe it. They are living in a toilet bowl, a cesspool, an amount of filth that is just, it's unbelievable that anybody would put somebody in a situation like that. But yet the majority of chickens on the planet are living exactly in those conditions.
I would imagine living in that kind of body would also be really painful.
Chickens have been shown in countless studies that they are pain racked, that they are in severe pain. Here's an example of an experiment that was done a number of years ago and reported in the British Veterinary Record. They give to one group of young chickens, the industry calls these chickens broiler chickens, they don't even call them chickens at all, they just call them broilers. The chickens who have been bred and raised specifically for the meat industry, which is usually around 42 days old or 6 weeks old or younger. So increasingly, they want them to go to slaughter like as soon as they're born, you know, just so they're big and heavy enough, because they don't want to feed them, because 75% of raising a chicken is feeding them. Of course, the industry wants to do everything possible to give the animals the cheapest food and the worst that they can get away with and still have a marketable product. But anyway, so the chickens are on a horrible diet. They're living in a cesspool and their bodies are racked with pain, disproportion, everything else. So this study was done and reported in the Veterinary Record, where researchers give the chickens a bowl of food which has no painkiller medication in it, no pain reliever. And then they give them another bowl which does have pain reliever. And it, the researcher said that it took them almost no time to figure out which food had relieved their pain.
Right.
So that showed two things. One is chickens learn very quickly what matters to them. And secondly, that they are in pain because they overwhelmingly chose the food with the pain reliever medication in it. So those, that's a very important indicator that these birds are suffering pain. These chickens are like weighing 5-6 pounds at 5 to 6 weeks of age. A normal chicken that age is just a little tiny chick, you know, very tiny and weighing barely a pound. And for several months, a number of years ago, just to show you the difference in proportion, and this is on our website, we had a large chicken from the rooster from the chicken meat industry named Felix, who had fallen off a truck, which frequently happens. And Felix was one of those chickens who had the good luck to have been rescued and brought to our sanctuary. At the same time, a little tiny black female chick had been rescued by somebody from a school hatching project. So both of them lived together in our kitchen. You had the little tiny black hen and the huge white chicken. We now call them Cornish crosses. That is the animal advocates and farmed animal sanctuary people. We call them Cornish crosses because the Cornish chicken is one of the bases of their genetics. But anyway, the little hen, Gabby, she just would run all over his back. He was crippled. He couldn't get up on his legs. So he never stood up. He had to just sit. You could tell he just loved having this little creature darting all around him and sometimes going under his feathers and walking around on his back and all of that. And they really got along so beautifully. But again, you saw how tiny she was at the same age, roughly the same age as he was. And his huge size, he's like that big and she's like that big. So anyway, to talk about the intelligence and emotions of chickens. One day I was sitting here at the computer on a Friday morning around 9 o'clock working. And all of a sudden, Gabby, the little tiny hen, black hen, came running in here and chirping loudly. You could tell she was very distressed. And she came right in here and I followed her out to the kitchen. And at first I looked at on the mat where the two of them normally sat, and Felix was not there. And so I looked around the corner of the kitchen, and there he was. He had his head stuck in the corner next to the radiator, and he had had a heart attack. And again, he was a baby, but that happens all the time to these heavy white chickens bred for the meat industry. So Gabby was very upset. I mean, that she was cheeping loudly, not like a contented peep or anything like that. It was clear she was very distressed and had a message for me, wanted me to know about what had happened to her friend.
The chickens at your sanctuary, where did the majority come from?
We have chickens from the chicken meat industry, because we live down here where the chicken industry, the so-called birthplace of the broiler industry, specifically Delaware, but the entire Delmarva Peninsula, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, the eastern shore of Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. This is what the industry calls the birthplace of the broiler industry. We started in Maryland, and then in 1998, we purchased this 25-acre property that would belong to us as opposed to just being a personal. This is whole property belongs to United Poultry Concerns. So that's one big source of chickens, of our chickens. And then in addition, over the years, we've taken in many hens from the egg industry. Most of them are the white Leghorn hens, who are the main type of hen used by the U.S. egg industry. They have been bred to be very small and compact and to lay an abnormal number of eggs, like chickens, as I mentioned, will normally, in this tropical forest from which they derived, will lay two clutches, each of about a dozen eggs, spring, then again in summer, raise those two groups of baby chicks, and then that's it for the rest of the year. Right. But the egg industry has bred hens to lay 250 to 300 eggs per hen per year. Wow. So again, you can't even really imagine the burden on the hen's body to go from laying two dozen eggs to laying 250 or 300 eggs. So of course, this causes all kinds of reproductive problems in the birds. Ovarian tumors are very common. And again, just related internal disabilities and so on. So we've taken in many of those types of chickens. In addition, we made an arrangement about 10 years ago with two different laboratories. We have taken in over the past 10 years, quite a number of the white Leghorn hens who were used in laboratory experiments at these mosquito testing laboratories. I don't ask too many questions because we want to get the chickens.
I had no idea we tested on chickens.
Routinely in all kinds of biomedical research, toxicological research, agribusiness research. Oh, chickens are, you know, again, they're like mice. They're cheap for one thing, and they're small, and you can have large numbers of them not taking up much space in a laboratory. So yeah, they're used for every kind of horrible experiment.
But they'll give them to you after?
Well, again, these chickens have the good fortune, at least the ones who we've seen, because otherwise they would send them to the zoo, typically to be eaten live by the predator or the raptors and the reptiles who eat only live animals. So, and I mean, you know, the deeper you go into the bowels of all of this, the more unspeakably horrific it is. But in any case, these particular chickens who have come from those two laboratories to our sanctuary have been in a very good shape. For one thing, they're not de-meat, and that's a big thing. Typically, as soon as hens are born into the hatcheries, they go to what's called the servicing rooms, where their beaks are burned off or sliced off or lasered off. So at least these chickens from the laboratories, these hens, are not de-beaked. They're not beak-trimmed. And usually they always, I would say, in fact, they are very clean. After all, they haven't been living in a filthy battery cage facility. They're living in a sterile laboratory, so their feathers are clean. And in general, they do quite well here in our sanctuary. They're ready. As soon as chickens see an environment that they genetically recognize, they are very quick to adapt to it, and more than adapt, they are ready to go. Start taking a dust bath almost immediately, which for a chicken is comparable to a water bath for us. That's how they clean their bodies. So that's one of the very first things, if not the first thing, that the chickens will do when they are set for the first time in their lives on the actual ground. And they recognize the ground. They recognize it genetically. It's part of who they are. The external environment in which they evolved is part of who they are genetically. And they often are very, or severely osteoporotic, particularly if they have come from battery cages. First of all, because of the abnormal demand for calcium to keep making these eggshells. And then also because they don't get any exercise, so their bones are weak and fragile. But once they start running around and in outdoors and they get to move, their bones strengthen. And then even their beaks will eventually become more normal because they start digging with their beaks in the ground. They start exploring and they want to perch. Chickens like to be up high, particularly at night. They want to get up on something above the ground. And it partly makes sense because, well, first of all, they're birds and they sleep in the trees if they're in their tropical forest habitat. So that desire has not been bred out of them at all.
Will you talk about how they see? I didn't know this until I learned more about you. When I learned about it, I was thinking, oh my God, all those chickens were kept inside their entire lives in the dark. But their sight and how they see. Will you talk about that? That's fascinating.
Chickens have full color spectrum vision. That means they see the entire spectrum of colors from the infrared to the ultraviolet. The reason that roosters crow when for humans it's still dark outside is because they see the sunrise before we do, because they see infrared light. So they're up and about in what for them is daylight when for us it is dark out. And chickens, they respond to colors. Colors are important to them. And when you think that they are forced to live in what is basically a shit-colored place where there's nothing but brown, essentially. There's nothing but and it's not only the ground. Now they do have these red feeders in there, and that's just so they'll easily find their feeders in the brown, otherwise all brown, because all the industry wants them to do is eat. They look at it strictly as this is like a business marvel. It's a marvel of capitalism. It's a marvel of creating all this product at cheap prices for not only our country, but the entire world.
Will you talk about the fact that chickens are the most consumed, most brutalized land animal on earth? When did that actually happen that they like shot up to number one?
Well, a lot of things happened. Again, if you read literature, just regular literature like Uncle Tom's Cabin or a lot of different books, sure. And they're based on in the past, whether it's America or Britain or wherever, Germany, you'll see that the idea of even among a poor people or poorer people, yeah. Is that they can at least kill a chicken for a special occasion, maybe for Sunday dinner or something like that. So a chicken has always been, ever since they had the misfortune of being discovered by the Europeans, I guess, and the people in Asia, to be considered, you know, they're easy to raise and you know, you can ease, you know, they've been eaten forever, like 10,000 years or so. So in the mid 40s, this idea came along of these contests in the late 40s and early 50s. The contests were sponsored by the A&P, Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, which when I was young, the A&P stores were like the first supermarkets, A&P. So they sponsored these contests as to who could create the fastest growing, largest, fastest growing chicken. And they talked about it was called the Chicken of Tomorrow contest. And they did several of these contests between, I think it was 1949 and 1952. But anyway, lo and behold, the winner of these Chicken Tomorrow contests was Van Tress, Cobb Van Tress, a California farmer or company. Anyway, all of this ended up becoming Tyson food. Tyson originated in Springdale, Arkansas, which is still their home base. And I guess Tyson bought up the genetic strains of Cobb Van Tress. It's C-O-B-B-Van-Tress. And this whole business, and then it was Truman, I think, who talked at the end of World War II or near the end of it, that we were going, the America was soon going to have a chicken in every pot, that we're going to see that America has a chicken in every pot. And as well, anyway, I won't get into that right now. But the thing is, there was this whole idea that, you know, chicken was going to be the new thing that was going to be available to everybody, mass produced, mass consumed. And so, you know, you start out at, well, you know, there are a few hundred, and then there are a couple million. And then there are, I think, by when I first published my first edition of Prison Chickens, Poisoned Eggs in 1996, I think the number of chickens in this country alone was something like 7 billion. Now it's 9 or more billion, and it's like 70 billion worldwide. So the America, the United States, created the modern chicken industry, and the chicken industry became the model of the factory farming industry for all animals. We see, for example, in the past 30 years, now we have aquaculture, which is the factory farming of aquatic animals. Sure. But the chicken industry was the model. So it was really the mid 20th century where the chicken meat industry got going. And then, as I learned along the way, many dairy barns were converted to battery cage hen operations at the end of World War II. So really, at the end of World War II, the whole idea of mass producing animals for and eggs and dairy, milk and cheese, of course, for the American public, was the idea. People were leaving the farms in droves. They, you know, more and more people, like in the 1930s, people were leaving farms and they were coming into urban areas. And the idea was to consolidate farming into a few huge corporations. And that's exactly what has happened. I think there are five major corporations in the United States who own all of the breeding stock and all of the, basically all of the chickens. You know, you have Tyson, Purdue Farms, Pilgrim's Pride, and like a couple others. So, you know, that's how things have become. And of course, the turkey industry is just as bad as the chickens. It's the same model, and the duck industry. It's just that there are, relatively speaking, there are many billions fewer. that's the only difference.
Well, since you've been doing this for 40 years, how do you get people to care about them?
I have the good fortune of writing very well and writing very well about chickens. For sure. I know how to evoke the life of a chicken. I would strongly recommend that people go to our homepage, and if they scroll down just a ways, they'll see the social life of chickens. It's how they walk, how they run, what they choose to do during the day, their wide range of vocalizations. I mean, chickens don't just crow and cluck. You know, they have their own way of saying things to each other and things that matter to them that I may not even recognize as mattering to them, although I think I've gotten about as close to that as possible. Because you can see, like, when they're scared, for example. A hen, for example, we had named Miss Gertrude. She couldn't walk. She was from the broiler chicken industry. She'd been rescued down here on the Eastern Shore. And she was right outside my office window one day. And I walked out there, and she was with two other chickens, actually. And she was just so upset. She was, her voice and her body language told me there's something very disturbing happening out here. And there were the other two hens with her. And then I looked, we're on the edge of the forest. And I looked at the edge of the forest right beyond our yard. And there was a fox. Gertrude knew right away. She was helpless. She couldn't escape. And the other ones were sticking right by her. They have so many ways of communicating to one another and to you that they're happy or they're not feeling good. I point out how when chickens are happy, their tail is up. Their eyes are very bright and alert. We already talked about how they have much better eyesight than we do. And I should mention, they have much better hearing than we do. One reason chickens have excellent hearing, as so many animals do in the tropical forest, is because there's so much foliage everywhere that they have to be able to communicate through hearing. They have to be able to hear each other as well as to see each other. And they yell. Tropical forest dwelling animals, monkeys, the peafowl, chickens. Chickens are like peafowl. They're pheasants. They're all pheasants. And they're from the tropical forests of Asia and the foothills of the Himalayan mountains. And they scream and screech parrots. You know, they yell to one another because they are communicating through dense foliage. So they see well, they hear well, much better than we see or hear. Our stereotypes about the natural world are just ignorant. They're just ignorant. And they've caused so much suffering and destruction. And how do we get people to care?
That's the question I want you to answer, actually.
Which one?
How do we get people to care?
One way to get them to care is to tell them a story and tell them, well, here's what caused me to decide I didn't want to eat animals anymore. And then finally to decide, you know, I just really don't want animal products anymore. And here's what happened to me. You know, I tell them I grew up eating meat. I grew up eating a ton of meat. I grew up not ever making a connection between meat and an animal. I can't even believe it. What would I do at lunchtime? I would run up to the huge Lexington market. And what would I buy up there? A barbecued chicken. And I would run, you know, because they, you know, had their head removed and all that and their claws, but notwithstanding. So I would run back. I was living in a boarding house. I would run up to my room. I only had a single room with a big iron bed that took almost the whole room up. And I would sit on the floor and devour that dead chicken. And one time I discovered like a sort of rubbery vein type of thing. And I pulled that out and I was like, what is that? But what is so distressing about that is it was like an aesthetic revulsion. It was right. Like, ew, what is that? But it didn't make me think about that I was eating a bird who had been alive, had somehow ended up dead. I don't know why, but I'll tell you what woke me up if we have a moment.
Yeah.
It was in 1974. I was living in Baltimore. I was working as a juvenile probation counselor. And I had gotten this a collection of essays by Tolstoy out of the local library. And there was an essay called The First Step. It was the first step, as he describes in his book. This happened to him very late in life. He was an avid meat eater and fox hunter and everything else. But he visited a Moscow slaughterhouse, maybe more than one. And he described the cows and the lambs. Mm-hmm. And he talked about talking to one of the slaughterers, and the slaughterer said something like, the cow, they come up to you trustingly, poor things. And he said, but what are we going to do? We have to eat meat. When he said that, you know, they come up to you trustingly, poor things. So when I read that, I'm like, oh, my God. I mean, how did I not know this? And yet the other thing is that it took 10 years until 1983 when I read two books. One was Peter Singer's Animal Liberation and The Cookbook for People Who Love Animals, published by The Farm, a co-op in Summertown, Tennessee. And in fact, it was they publish a wide variety, particularly of vegan and vegetarian cookbooks. And they published my book, Prison Chickens, Poisoned Eggs, in two edition. But it was like amongst those recipes, those vegan recipes, were like little snatches of information. And did you know, for example, that dairy cows, okay, their udders have been artificially bred to be so huge and heavy, they weigh the cows down, and their udders often just drag on the floor of the milking parlor, and the workers just trample on their udders as they walk around, and how that's also a major reason why cows suffer almost uniformly everywhere from an extremely painful disease called mastitis. I mean, that when I read down on the factory farm, I didn't need any reason to stop eating eggs then or any other animal product. All I had to do was read how these animals are living. And that is it. I didn't want milk anymore. I didn't want eggs anymore. That was the end of that.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much for today. Thank you so much for the past 40 years of your work. And one day I would love to visit the sanctuary. So
thank you. It's been a pleasure and a real privilege. I appreciate everything.
To learn more about Karen, to learn more about United Poultry Concerns, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We'll have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, Olivia Deming, and Anna Kallner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.